You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at SacksInTheBasement.com. Gavin Sheets, I see you. I just want to make sure you know I see you, Gavin. Ed sees you too. We spent the whole offseason questioning whether or not you had a spot on this team. We spent all of spring training saying Mike Moustakas was going to take your spot on the 26-man roster. You make the team, don't have any set playing time. Eloy Jimenez goes down. The manager, who's a paint-by-numbers manager, just thrust you into the middle of his order, and you're killing the ball. Andrew Vaughn should be worried. Eloy Jimenez better get back soon, because Gavin Sheets is making the most of what may be his final opportunity with the White Sox. I mean, I didn't think this guy was going to last the month of April on this team. Keep it up. I see you, Gavin. This episode of Sacks in the Basement brought to you by Cork and Carry at the Park at 33rd and Princeton in the shadow of the ballpark with an award-winning menu of burgers and ballpark favorites. Plus, they got the greatest craft beer selection that you're going to find right outside of the ballpark. This is where I bring the whole family before games. I bring the 8-year-old. I get him in one of the high top tables. Friendly staff, great food, everything he wants on a menu, and some fancy stuff for me. Afterwards, it's a party, win or lose, and Cork and Carry Beverly at 106th and Western. All summer long with that outdoor patio is going to be special as it always is. Your place for pregame, postgame, and in-game viewing parties, Cork and Carry at the Park. See more at corkandcarry.com. I also see starting pitching that is good, relief pitching that is bad, and an offense that needs to score more runs. That said, on April the 1st, Pedro Grifol said that Eloy Jimenez would be day-to-day and they would play a man short. The moment that that got out, we immediately tweeted out from the Sox in the Basement account, quote, as you read this, you're thinking the same thing as the rest of us. And then in 5 days, they'll finally put him on the IL. April the 1st, we told you that's how they were going to do this. April the 5th, they put Eloy Jimenez on the IL finally, after playing a man short for several games. There is no difference in this team right now as to how they're handling injuries than how we've watched it frustratingly. Is that a word? Frustratingly? Frustrated? Whatever.
Frustratingly, yes.
Like, this is just the same thing year in, year out. Like, we know as fans what this team is. We know how poorly run they are. We know it starts at the top with their billionaire owner that really doesn't care about us. Drink your campfire milkshake and listen to our threats about Nashville and just take what we shove down your throat. And we're here. We're watching Eloy Jimenez, who's always injured, habitually injured, made out of glass, essentially. Mr. Glass, Eloy Jimenez. Not the only guy who gets injured on this team, but we've watched this guy again. This is a guy that they couldn't move for a prospect at the deadline last year. That's why they moved Jake Berger. This is a guy they couldn't move in the offseason at his price tag because everybody in Major League Baseball knows who he is. We know what he is. And the moment he got this injury, an injury which, by the way, took 2 weeks for him to recover from the last time he got this exact injury, he should have been placed on the IL. I mean, the only argument you can make, Ed, is that, well, we wanted to bring up Robbie Grossman. We felt like he needed a couple extra days in AAA. So we're just like, oh, we'll just try to wait a few extra days. But then why wasn't Lenin Sosa, who came to Chicago the day of Eloy's injury, because somebody felt like it would be a good idea to have him in town, why was he never added for a couple days to the major league roster? The way that they manage their 40-man, they manage their farm system, the way they manage their team will always be perplexing. And we're going to get into that a little bit with James Fox of Future Sox later on in this program.
Yeah, well, it's the same old stuff. Even if you wanted to give Robbie Grossman an extra couple of days, then bring Lenin Sosa up and send him back down, or bring Grossman up and let him hit at the major league level and get, you know, his timing down up here. Because first of all, the guy's a veteran, so it's not like he hasn't seen these pitchers before. And second of all, it's not like we're harming our chances to win the division by having Robbie Grossman, you know, in the lineup when he's a little cold. You wonder if there's some disconnect between the dugout and the general manager and the information that Getz is getting, because if it's not a doctor performing an MRI, okay, if it's not a medical, you know, a trainer saying that this is an injury that needs to be addressed right away, if this is Pedro saying, you know, Aloy thinks he's fine, and I believe him, so don't put him on the IL because I'll probably play him tomorrow when he walks in the door and feels good, then this is, you know, a manager that either has his head in the sand or is just not really thinking about his player, not really thinking about what this guy is.
Pedro was actually saying he may be playing this weekend. As I mean, just like within 24 hours before he was put on the IL, he was telling reporters that he might be playing this weekend. And I don't know, is Getz just leaving Pedro out there to die? I mean, I suggested all offseason he was the scapegoat. This is a first-year general manager who was handed a manager because the old man's not going to let him pick his new manager, who probably doesn't really want him. I know we keep hearing people say, oh, he's a KC guy. Oh, Getz says nice things about him. But find me a general manager that wants to be saddled with a manager he didn't select. There is no such thing.
No.
Nobody wants that. No. So here's the thing. And it extends your honeymoon period with the fan base, in which Getz is not getting like a true one because he was part of the organization. But again, he didn't make the decisions. It was Hahn and Williams that were making the decisions. So it gives you more time to be able to say, this wasn't my fault. I didn't do this. I'm trying to fix it. Look, I tried to fix it and give the manager what he wanted. And guess what? He couldn't handle it. He can't handle these things like the Aloy thing. We all know what it is. Like, I mean, almost like you can almost see Getz at some point later on when Pedro's out the door referring, if not directly, kind of referencing the things that we talk about constantly on the show and that Sox fans are talking about across, you know, the entire Sox world. About what this team is and how they operate and how absurd things are and some of the decision making and stuff like that, and be able to just kind of drop that in his former manager at that time's lap. And I really do believe that when this year is over, Pedro is not the manager. And if they get off to like a 5-25 start, I think he dumps them then. There's a reason you have a guy in Grady Sizemore sitting on the bench and he is listed as just major league coach. I'm not saying he's going to be the manager, but somebody in that bench that was really put together by the new group that's come in with this front office and basically told Pedro, we're going to put this guy in there with you. We're going to put this guy in there with you. Don't worry. We're not replacing you. One of those guys is going to replace him. And then Grady's going to be in that guy's spot, unless the intention is that they think that Grady Sizemore is like a future manager.
He's Josh Barfield's guy. He's a guy that was in the Arizona Diamondbacks organization as a coach, and without a real defined position, and Barfield's the one who brings him over here with the intention of turning him into something.
And we may find out what that something is this year. On the line with me right now, the Sox nerd, Dave Marin, who is at the ballpark. He's going to be there for 81 games. He's going to be putting all the stats up there on the scoreboard. He's going to be trying to keep it interesting for you, no matter what the record is. And he's brought to you by the Village of Lamont. Want to experience a downtown with real history, great eats and drinks, and green spaces filled with adventure? Visit the Village of Lamont. Shop, dine, drink, explore, and see everything they have going on this weekend and beyond at lamontdowntown.com. Nerd, what do you got for me this week?
Chris, about a week into the season, here are a few things I've learned about some members of the 2024 White Sox. I have to start with Garrett Crochet, who has been the White Sox first week MVP. Should we give him the Yermin Mercedes Award? Anyway, Crochet's 15 strikeouts in his first two major league starts are a Sox record, surpassing the 14 Dane Dunning had in 2020 and Hector Santiago had in 2012. Wednesday's start against the juggernaut Braves continued an encouraging pattern for Crochet. In limiting the reigning NL East champs to one run in seven innings, Crochet dropped his career ERA against teams 500 or better to 1.76, and that's with a pretty good sample size of 30 games and 41 innings. In the live ball era, that's from 1920 on, the only Sox pitcher with a lower ERA than Crochet in that situation is Ray Searidge at 1.44. While mining for nuggets for the Braves series, I discovered that Andrew Benintendi, of all people, is one of the greatest hitters in history against the Atlanta Braves. Even though he only got one hit during the series, Benintendi still ranks fourth all-time among players with at least 41 at-bats against the Braves with a 4.15 average. Counting only the Braves' time in Atlanta, Benintendi's 4.15 ranks third all-time behind Junior Spivey's 4.19 and Cal Ripken Jr.'s 4.17. Michael Kopech's velocity as a reliever has been impressive. In picking up his first save in the Sox's first win of the season, Kopech threw 8 of his 39 pitches over 100 miles an hour, with 9 offerings eclipsing 99 miles an hour. He topped out at 100.8, and he finished off a strikeout of Adam Duvall with back-to-back pitches that were over 100 after surrendering a homer. Before I get to my zingers, I remind you that gems like these and others can be found on my blog, which you can find at SoxInTheBasement.com. If I may, Chris, I have been posting a White Sox birthday thread on X daily, where I post one nugget on every Sox player celebrating a birthday that day. If you really want to get deep in the White Sox weeds, check out that feature. My zingers, Dominique Fletcher became the first Sox outfielder with assists in his first two games of the season since Rusty Coons in 1980. Luis Robert Jr. and Alejandro Diaza are the only players to record multi-homer games in March in the city of Chicago. Yoan Moncada's triple in the season's second game was the White Sox first ever in the month of March. And on April 1st, Chris Flexen became the first number 77 to start a game on the mound for the Sox. The only other player to start a game for the Sox wearing double 7 was infielder Yomer Sanchez, who donned that number in his rookie season of 2014. That's it, Chris. More than you wanted to know about Dane Dunning, Hector Santiago, Ray Searidge, and Southside numerology.
The weather's getting warm. You may be looking at changing your exterior windows, doors, patio doors, and storm doors. Look no further than Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest. No high-pressure sales. They're not in your house giving you a deal that if they walk out the door, the deal walks out with them. They don't do it that way. Instead, you go to their showroom. You see the owner right there. He answers all your questions. You have all of the examples, all of the windows and doors in full living color right in front of you in full size with all the extras and add-ons there for you to see instead of inside of a catalog. When the install happens, it's all of their own installers and there's an owner on scene as well. They've been doing it this way in Oak Forest since 1985. All major brands, custom made, no stock items for a perfect fit. If you are in the Chicagoland area on the South Side, get over to 159th and Ridgeland, 6280 159th Street, to Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest. See more at windowdooroakforest.com. Joining me on the phone line right now from Future Sox, our good friend James Fox is on the line. How are you, James?
I'm great, sir. How are you, Chris?
It's a very exciting season filled with possibility.
Yeah, well, minor league baseball starts tonight.
I am interested in what's going on in the minors because all these guys have chances of being on the major league roster, many of them this season. In fact, I was looking at just the month of April here and who could be here by the first based upon Chris Getz's comments the other day. We've got Clevinger expected here by the first, so you're going to add into your rotation. You've got Robbie Grossman, who seems like he should be here already, and at some point is going to be here. Nick Nastrini, you would think, is joining the rotation. Some guys are going to go. I don't know how Chris Flexen remains in your rotation once Nastrini and Clevinger are added. I don't know who's getting bounced out of the outfield, but poor Dominic Fletcher better figure out how to hit soon. Who do you have in the minor leagues right now? Because you study that for Future Sox. Who do you have joining this team in the next month or so that you feel pretty confident has a shot of being on the major league roster?
Yeah, I mean, the next month is tough just because I need to see, like, some minor league performances because I do think, like, this year is going to be a little bit different. I think these guys are going to have to earn their way onto the team, which I think we've been asking for a while, right? Like, Oscar Colas has played well in Charlotte, but the manager hates him, so I don't know that we're going to see him. And look, I think Robbie Grossman originally was going to replace Sheets. You know, there's some bullpen guys in the minors. They're playing in Charlotte right now, and that park is like playing in a sandbox. Like all these guys are getting bombed, and they're playing the Norfolk Tides, which is like all of the top Orioles prospects. Like it's been a mess.
It's the greatest AAA team ever assembled, I want to say, yeah, that they're playing.
Yeah, so bringing up, and literally, like, if you hit the ball in the air in Charlotte, like, it's a homer. Like, it's insane. So, like, that's not really great, like, those guys. So, you think, like, look, like, Mastrini, I think we could see him as early as Monday, but for some reason, I feel like that'll be Brad Keller, like, making that start. And then, like, a lot of your other prospects, like, the guys that we expect to see that might actually be on the next, like, good Sox team are in Birmingham. Now, I could make the argument that I wouldn't even let some of these guys pitch in Charlotte, like, just for, like, their confidence. But, like, Drew Thorpe, Jake Eater was acquired at last year's trade deadline. Kai Bush, you know, all these names are all in the Birmingham starting rotation. So I would say any of them, like Colson Montgomery, we're going to see. I don't know how quickly. He's been okay in Charlotte. He needs to play for a while in Charlotte. I don't want this to be like a Gordon Beckham thing where, you know, the White Sox are 6-20 and like all of a sudden like Montgomery's coming up to like save the day. I really hope that they don't do that. And then, obviously, like, Brian Ramos is on the 40-man. I think he's part of their future. But he plays third base, and, like, Moncada's going to be here, and he's only at double-A. So that might be, like, a second-half thing. So, look, I don't know. Like, I don't know how many guys we're going to see soon, but there's lots of fungible pieces on this roster, which that's one thing, like, minor thing that I'm looking forward to, right? Like, if these veterans that are making $1 million are awful, there's no reason to not just launch these guys and bring somebody else up and churn this roster. So I'm curious to see how they handle that.
Well, let me ask you about a guy who's spent a lot of time in the minors that you probably know more about than I do, because I've only seen a small sample size of him at the major league level, and that's Corey Lee, because my instinct is to say you should be playing this guy more. I don't care if you gave Maldonado money. I don't care if you told him that he was going to be there every day. Everybody's baseball career ends, and I just hate watching them. Like, I know they're not going to win a division, but I just hate watching them just be so inept up there. Like, maybe let the guy who's got the hot hand get a couple more at-bats. Like, what kind of player is he? And does he, in your mind, have the natural talent to be a Major League Baseball catcher?
Sure, it might be as a backup, like, or, like, as the second guy in a role, but, like, that's fine, right? Like, I think he's probably, like, going to go back to Charlotte because they have Stassi and Maldonado. So, like, I agree with you. I think they're putting a lot of faith in Martin Maldonado's, like, ability to, like, look, he's still a really good game caller. And I think in the room or all that crap that we don't really care about, right? Like, has he made an influence on Garrett Crochet? Maybe, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, has Eric Fetty been better because he's throwing to Maldonado? Possibly. They clearly think that stuff matters. And if you're going to have a lot of young pitchers up, like, that's probably why Maldonado is here. Now, the rest of his game has completely cratered. Like, the other catcher stuff, like the pass balls and the throwing and all that stuff's, like, not great, and he's never been able to hit. So, look, if they decided, like, hey, Corey Lee has looked pretty good, we're going to give him, like, the majority of the time, and you just, like, dump Stassi or something, like, I'd be totally fine with that. Otherwise, Corey Lee's probably going to go to Charlotte, and we'll kind of see what happens. But he does look much better than he looked last year. He's a former first-round pick of the Astros. Like, catchers take a while. And he was a first-round pick, right? So somebody at one point thought that he's a future big-league starting catcher. I don't know that he's a starting catcher, but he's definitely a big league catcher, and it'll be unfortunate to, like, see him go down if that's, like, what they're going to do.
All right, so let's talk about pitching, and let's talk about the pitching at the three or levels or so in the minor leagues that we have here. You know you have Fetty signed next year, and if Garrett Crochet really is this, that's exciting. I don't know how many innings they're going to give him before they eventually have to shut him down in a lost season, but it's exciting. And then you have young guys. We already know Nastrini is probably ticketed to be here soon, and he looked good in spring. And I remember you having good thoughts about him last year when he was acquired in that deal. And Drew Thorpe is a really high-end prospect that could get here. Who are you watching the most right now? What level, really, should we be watching the most right now when it comes to pitching?
I would say, well, so it's a two-pronged answer, okay? So, well, I guess even three, possibly. But so Nastrini and Cannon are in Charlotte. I think those are, like, the closest guys probably to the big leagues, but neither one is on the 40-man roster right now, okay? So, like, your other guys that are on the 40, Drew Thorpe and Jairo Iriarte, both were members of that deal with the Padres. They're both in Birmingham, along with Jake Eater and Kai Bush, who were both acquired at last year's trade deadline. So, look, like, Thorpe will probably be here at some point. Mastrini will probably be here at some point. Jonathan Cannon's solid. He's like a back end type, like a number five guy, right? But the guy that I'm most interested in is Jake Eder, because so Jake Eder could be a number two starter, a lefty in the rotation. He's already like 25 because of when he was drafted, and then he had Tommy John. He's one of the highest upside starters in all of the minor leagues. You know, he kind of struggled when he came here for Jake Berger last year, but reports from like backfield games have just kind of indicated that his stuff is back. And I'm really curious to see him in Birmingham, because if he's good, there's no reason to even like send him to Charlotte. I would just like hike him up and have him pitch in the big leagues in some sort of role, but he needs innings and he needs to pitch. Like, he's battled injuries. So that's the guy that I'm probably the most interested in. But I mean, look, their highest upside guy is Noah Schultz. We're not going to see him in the majors this year, obviously. He's headlining the rotation in Winston-Salem. Something that's interesting that they're doing with Schultz. So he only threw 27 innings last year. They're treating him like a college starter. He, instead of like doing a five-man rotation in Winston, he's going to pitch every Saturday, like a Saturday starter type thing. So every Saturday night, Noah Schultz is throwing, hopefully throughout the year. And then that'll be the way that they get him, you know, 80 to 100 innings somehow.
Is there an injury concern? Is that why they're doing it? It's like they're treating a guy who's got an injury like lightly. Why are they doing that?
So I don't think it's an injury concern, but they're treating him like with kid gloves, because he's just like never thrown really much. So his senior year in high school, he got mono and didn't pitch. And then he was great like in short stints. And then they drafted him out of like a college league. And then last year, he only threw 27 innings because he did get hurt twice. He had a flexor strain, and then he had a shoulder thing at the end of the year. I've talked to multiple people, including somebody extremely close to him. And this is a White Sox problem for me, but like, so basically his shoulder hurt last year because he didn't have like a throwing program. They were asking him like, oh, when did you throw like midweek? And he's like, oh, well, I didn't, because nobody told him to. So like, there were issues with his throwing program. Like, he would pitch for Kannapolis and then do nothing and then pitch for Kannapolis again. It just shows you like, I don't know, man. Like, this the end of the White Sox thing under Rick and Kenny, and like, maybe we can lump gets in there or whatever. Like, I don't know. There was like a lot of moving parts in the minor leagues last year. There was no pitching coordinator because he left. Multiple pitching coaches left. So we'll see. Like, they're going to go, like, he's going to be a weekly starter. The biggest thing for him is, I don't even care where he pitches or the results. Like, if he can get 70 to 75 innings, he's going to be possibly the best left-handed pitcher in the minor leagues, like the top lefty starter prospect, like in baseball. That's how good this guy can be. That's how good he's looked, you know, on the backfields, and he'll be at high A Winston-Salem to start.
Once again, James Fox from Future Sox joining us here on Sox in the Basement. If you are a small business owner, you know just how challenging things can get, but you're a natural born problem solver, so it's all good. Still, it doesn't hurt to have some good neighborly help. Like yourself, State Farm agents are also small business owners. This enables them to help you choose the right insurance coverage to fit your small business needs. So why not insure your small business with a fellow small business owner who also happens to be a good neighbor? Contact State Farm agent John Harrell, 708-481-4500. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. You mentioned Jake Eder before we get into the hitters and the guys that could improve this dismal offense, if there are any down there. Let's just talk a little bit more about Eder. Because to me, you know, you know more about these guys down the minors than I do. I look at the Eder trade, and I look at what Jake Berger's doing early on this year, what he did in the second half of last year, and I go, I hate that trade. I just hate that trade. I look at how bad my team is offensively, and I'm like, who is this Eder guy, and what is he ever going to be? So when you're talking to a fan like me, and trust me, there's a lot of us out there are like, who is this guy, and why did we get rid of Berger? Am I going to get proven wrong here? Is there a possibility that I'm going to sit back in a couple of years and say that wasn't a bad trade because Eder turned into something?
I mean, maybe. He's got a pitch, though. So, like, you know, lots of people, like, your Jim Callises of the world. Like, we just had Jim Callis on the Future Sox pod a couple weeks ago, and he thought that was a great trade for the White Sox, like a no-brainer, right? He thinks that Jake Eder's are tougher to find than Jake Berger's are. Now, like, I get it from the standpoint of, like, a White Sox fan. Like, Jake Berger was fun. This team is terrible, right? And he's, like, kind of cool and hits homers and stuff. But I think the way that baseball people have kind of looked at Jake Berger is he's like a 320 on base slugger without a defensive position, right? So he's like maybe a two war player. So it shouldn't be that hard to replicate. The problem is, like, Jake Eater's floor is gets hurt again and doesn't pitch in the big leagues, right? And then the trade's a disaster. So I can sit here and talk about how high an upside Jake Eater has and how much I like him. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that, you know, he's definitely going to hit. So it's definitely a risky deal. You know, I think the biggest thing was, like, the White Sox essentially, for whatever reason, at last year's deadline, they chose Eloy Jimenez over Jake Berger because you can't have both. Should the question have been Jake Berger or Andrew Vaughn? You know what I mean? Like, I think they looked at it as they're like, well, these guys are two DHs. Berger has value. We're going to trade him because nobody wants Eloy. But should you have just transitioned Berger to first and be your first base masher and just give up on Andrew Vaughn because he doesn't really appear to be that? Like, I don't really know. It wasn't Chris Getz that traded Jake Berger. So we'll see. All they can do at this point is just like salvage Eater and see if you can like replace the offense from somewhere. But I do think Berger is a little bit overhyped. Like, I think he's fun and I'd like to have him on this team. But I mean, with no defensive position and all power and like not really an on-base guy, like he's fun, but he's probably like a 2-2.5 war player.
All right, so Colson Montgomery's down in the minors and at some point will be a major leaguer. He'll hit in the middle of the order for the next 15 years and be a superstar. Let's just assume that that possibly happens.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Wouldn't it be? But even if that happens, they don't have enough. And they're going to have a very low payroll walking in the next year with all the buyouts that they'll probably do, unless they're able to move a guy like Moncada if he continues to perform the way that he's performing. But like, they're going to have like pitching, possibly young pitching available, listening to you, that, and they're not going to have to worry as much about the rotation. It'll just be young. They may add a starter, who knows, but what they're really going to be spending the money on, and they should be able to spend money very easily next year and add offense. It shouldn't be that hard to go find some professional hitters to come in here and improve this lineup. Is there anything they currently have in the minors that is going to work its way up here this year or next that is going to help them with their terrible, terrible offensive lineup?
Yeah, so I think next year for sure. This year is a stretch, right? I think like I tweeted last week or maybe it was earlier this week that if there was like a button that you could hit to simulate the rest of this season, Chris Getz would hit that button. Like he would. Like this is ugly. We're going to see Colson. Look, the easiest way for the White Sox to get back to contention, in my opinion, is for Colson Montgomery to be a stud, because then you'd have him and Luis Robert and it gets easier to fill in around. And I know people right now are like, what do you mean they have no players? And like, I get that. Right. I think Brian Ramos and Edgar Caro both factor into this thing somehow, but they're both in double A. So it won't be this year. That's a catcher and a third baseman. And then like some guys that are like on the periphery, Jacob Burke, Terrell Tatum, Wilfred Varas, that's your outfield in double A. The team in double A is pretty good. There's like 11 or 12 top 30 White Sox prospects on the team with the Barons. None of those guys are stars, but Jacob Burke is probably a big league outfielder, whether in a fourth outfield role or something, right? So you will have guys. I know everybody's given up on Dominic Fletcher after six games. Like, he sucks, right? That's the consensus now. But I mean, yeah, like you have him as like potentially part of this thing. But yeah, no, like they definitely have more parts on the pitching side. But what I'll tell you is they have the fifth pick in this year's draft, and they're going to get a really good player because of like how good the top of this draft is. And I've gone back and forth on this. I've always been a take offense guy, but there's two aces in this draft. Hagen Smith, the lefty out of Mississippi State, or out of Arkansas, excuse me, and Chase Burns out of Wake Forest. If either of those guys are on the board for the White Sox, I'm taking them, and those guys could pitch in the big leagues as early as next year. And I feel that way because of, like, who your owner is. Like, I think the White Sox are going to have to develop their own pitching, and then you can go out and pay for position players because, like, the position players market is kind of cratered in free agency. So, like, if you could fill a couple of spots with the young guys to go with Robert and Moncada, and then you have to go buy two or three position players, but you can develop your own pitching. I think that's probably the best path forward for them in 25 and 26.
There's so much good stuff there. I don't even know if I scratched the surface with you. I mean, there's so much going on with the team, and to be honest with you, I'm more interested in what you have to say than watching the team, because I know how bad this is. This is awful. This is going to be just a rough season. I think the one thing I'm watching for is I'm trying to figure out how Chris Getz values his players. Like, I felt like the move where he got rid of Popeye Rodriguez was him sitting there saying to himself, he's not going to help me this year. I don't have him in my long-term plans. I don't want to lose 100 games. It, like, for some reason, Getz stubbornly wants to somehow look halfway decent even in a year that's lost. And if you're not part of the long-term plan, you're just one of the many guys on the 40-man roster to have your name highlighted, and he'll just drop you. Because in reality, you're either part of the long-term future, you're something that can help him this year, or you're just somebody that I dump, and you're just one of many that's sitting up on the board, and you can just reach up there randomly and just dump anybody. And I'm really curious as to how he'll do things with promotions and guys being moved on and off the 40-man.
Well, and I know that, look, I'm guilty, right? I'm part of the prospect industrial complex that comes on shows like this one and hypes up these prospects, and then they turn into nothing, right? But, like, Jose Rodriguez, there are very significant concerns with him. Like, you know, he can play in the middle infield, and he's got some pop, and he steals some bases, but he's got huge, like, approach issues. Like, he doesn't walk. He swings at everything. So, like, could he be a big leaguer? Yeah. Do you want to lose him for nothing? No. So he's actually been away from Charlotte, like, on a family matter. So I hope this is nothing nefarious, and I don't want to speculate. Like, I hope there's, like, nothing serious going on with him where they would have made a move like this. But, like, I think it might be as simple as, like you said, you look at the 40, right? They like Lenin Sosa and Braden Shumake better than Jose Rodriguez, and you can't carry this many position players. Now, could you make the argument that they should just keep Jose Rodriguez and get rid of Paul DeJong? Sure, you could make that argument. And, like, I'd be like, fine, that's fine. But, you know, they're clearly going to have these veterans for at least a little while. So, you know, something's going to have to give. There's just guys occupying spots. You know, the 40 man's, like, basically cut in half from when he took over. It's a lot of new names. And I don't know that getting rid of Jose Rodriguez is the right move. But, I mean, I don't know that he's, like, going to be a big league player either.
Perfect. James Fox from Future Sox. Check out everything that he does. I mean, I'll be honest, you're going to be on this show a lot this year because this team is brutal. And so we have to look to the future. And I think we're going to see a lot of guys come up from the minors in every month. We're going to see new guys popping up here. And I'm going to want to know about them. I appreciate you jumping on Sox in the Basement.
All righty, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Sox in the Basement. Sox in the Basement. Socks in the Basement.
Socks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always on socksinthebasement.com.